Okay, Erev Tov, everybody. Parashat Ki Tisa. There's a lot to talk about this parasha, obviously, from Machatzit HaShekel to the Kiyor to the Chayta Egel and on and on and on. But because we're doing this series on minor characters, I had to find a minor character. And there aren't many. And I decided that Bezalel is not minor enough. Since everybody knows who Bezalel is, but Oholiab ben Achisamach is a little bit more minor than he is, in a sense. I hope that's not insulting to Oholiab. I had a little bit of a hesitancy about picking him, only because we covered Chushim ben Dan earlier on in the year, and they're obviously very connected, being that they're both from Shevet Dan, and some of the themes are going to connect. But hopefully I can provide some new insights over the course of this shiur. Okay, Oholiab shows up here in Parashat Ki Tisa, and then again in Vayakav Pekudei, as essentially the second to Bezalel, as his right-hand man, the one who helps to architect the Mishkan. And the Torah says, "Vayidaber Hashem l'Moshe l'Emor, Rei karati b'shem Bezalel b'noi b'nechor l'mate Yehuda." So this is Hashem saying that he's called on Bezalel ben Uri ben Hur to be the main architect. He's going to fill him up with all kinds of wisdoms. He's going to make sure that he knows how to work with the gold and the silver and with the copper. And he's going to know how to cut stones and carve wood. And then, and I've given him Oholiab ben Achisamach from Shevet Dan, and I have filled the hearts of anybody who wants to help, and they're going to do everything that I commanded you. Okay, so our question tonight is going to be, who is this Oholiab ben Achisamach, and why was he chosen as the second to Bezalel? Before we even look at anything, what do you guys think? Any suggestions? Any insights before we start?
I have a question before that. It sounds like there was nobody that had the skills, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu had to pick two people. So do any of the Mefarshim talk about why these specific people were picked? And why was there nobody who really had the necessary skills?
Well, that's an interesting point. I'm not sure why you say, Mom, that it sounds like there was nobody with any skills. It doesn't say explicitly there was nobody with any skills. But if we were to think, reasonably, we would be surprised if there was anybody with these kinds of skills. They had just spent 200 years in Egypt, a good portion of them as slaves, not working exactly with gold and silver. These aren't skills that they would have picked up. And the Torah does mention that Bezalel had some special skills in this, but it doesn't say anything about anybody else. So it's hard to know what people knew and didn't know. I would have assumed that people were not skilled in these ways, in metallurgy or in carving or sculpting or anything like that. That's what I would have said off the bat.
One question I have is, why do we need two people?
Okay, that's a good question.
Why is it not that, why is Bezalel not enough?
Yeah, that's a good question.
But I think the emphasis is on the fact that Hashem has granted skills to these people, that they didn't just come from anywhere. Hashem granted them skills.
Right, and not just to them, of course. At the end, it says, "Belev kol chachamim natati chachma, v'asu et kol asher tziviticha." Now I'm going to fill up the hearts of anybody, of all the people that are going to work there. Okay, so let's get started. There are a few different approaches that we can take over here. I'm going to break this down into three sections. The first, we're going to look at Oholiab and examine him just as an individual, okay? And we'll see what the Mefarshim have to say. So the Malbim takes one approach. He's on one side of the spectrum. He says, there are times when godly inspiration comes to an individual for the sake of his own wisdom or for his own prophecy. Then there are times when the inspiration is in such abundance that the person is merely a vehicle through which the light passes on to others. So sometimes a prophet will prophesy on his own, and basically the buck stops there. It reaches the prophet, and then, or the Ruach HaKodesh reaches the individual, and he gives everything that he has, and then it's expended. But in our case, Bezalel was so filled with inspiration that it overflowed to Oholiab, who was already a worthy recipient, and from him it flowed to all the others. Eliav was the vessel through which the divine inspiration for building the tabernacle flowed forth to all the builders and craftsmen. Okay, so what does the Malbim think of Oholiab? Why was Oholiab chosen?
He's a good medium.
Yeah, it sounds like Oholiab didn't necessarily have great skills. It's hard to know what the Malbim means when he says who is a ready and worthy recipient. He could mean because he was already skilled, so that was why he was a good choice. But I think it's more likely that he was just a good recipient. He was a good listener. He was a good follower. He was a good worker. He knew how to follow instructions, or simply spiritually, maybe, that he was on a certain level, that he was also able to receive the Ruach HaKodesh directly from Bezalel and to rebound that on to the rest. So there's nothing really that special about Oholiab, I would think, except for the fact that he's a worthy recipient. Okay, so it says nothing about his skills, really.
I think he's drawing on the distinction that takes between karati and natati. There's karati the tzel.
Yeah.
So it seems that he had it already, but natati, One's more passive, one's more active.
Okay. Yeah, and also natati ito. Natati ito is interesting. I gave with him. Interesting. Okay. It's a good point. The Abarbanel actually is the only one that I found who takes a completely different approach. And he takes it in two different places, actually, but I just brought you the one that's more blatant, which is not here in Parashat Kitisa, but actually in Pekudei, where he says, So apparently, Oholiab is actually known as a master craftsman. So here, Oholiab is chosen actually for sure for his skills. He writes this, the Rabbi actually writes in Parshat Kitisa, in our Parsha, he says that actually Oholiab was the obvious choice. Bezalel was the non-obvious choice. Bezalel, does anybody know, according to the Gemara in Sanhedrin, how old was Bezalel at the time when he was chosen? He was 13. That's exactly right. He was 13. He was just old enough to be considered a man. And it was actually the source for the idea that a man is at 13 years old. That's when you're a bar mitzvah. And Bezalel is the source for that. So he was a young boy. And perhaps people, the Abar Banel says that people were not going to take him seriously. So Moshe had to out and out choose him and present him to the people as being the choice of God. Whereas Oholiab didn't need that. Oholiab was the obvious choice. He was already a master craftsman.
I hope I'm not jumping the gun with this comment, but it seems that going back to your original question, whether he was the assistant or the foreman, it seems that Malvin takes a view that he's the foreman, because he's inspiration to bring for all the other builders and craftsmen. His knowledge flowed forth, it's hard to say, to all the builders and craftsmen as a foreman. On the other hand, Abarbanel seems to say that they're just about an equal setting, which takes the opposite point of view as far as your question goes.
I guess when I wrote foreman, I actually was thinking more like the person who's in charge, who's actually directing everybody what to do, because they're an actual craftsman. So I thought full foreman was more mechubad, as a person who is actually in charge. But I hear you. Whereas artist assistant just means, I thought more like what the Malbim was saying, that no, he's like a sous chef. He has a little bit of expertise maybe, but he's not the chef. He just gets told what to do. You know, somebody says scalpel, he brings the scalpel. I know that's not what a sous chef does.
no, not really.
The Tzvor HaMor just picks up on this a tiny bit, and he says, "Lefi shetovim ashnayim min ha'echad." He says, "Why do you need two?" He asks, "Why do you need two?" He says, "Because two is better than one. Two is better than one." Amar v'ito aliyav, ish chacham ra'oi lishrot shechina b'Yisrael al yado. So the Tzvor HaMor kind of is a little bit, I think, more in the camp of the Malbim, if I read the Malbim right. It's saying that it was a spiritual pick. Aliyav didn't necessarily have any special skills, but he was chosen because he was, as an individual, a person who was ra'ui to have the Shekhinah rest upon him. But what I find in common between all three of these is that the Malbim, the Rabbanon, the Tzora Mor talk about Aholiyav as a person, as an individual, and his personal qualities. And that's what they all say. It matters who Aholiyav was as a person. Most of the Mefarshim and the Midrashim and the sources that we'll find don't look at Aholiyav as a person. They look at him as a symbol. The question is, what is he a symbol of? Well, what do we know about Aholiyav? We only know one thing about Aholiyav for sure. There's only one thing we know for sure. What is it?
Shevet Dan.
He's from Shevet Dan. That's it. That's all we know. Well, we also know his father's name. His father's name is Ahisamach. But we know, more importantly, that he's from Shevet Dan. Now, how important is that? So the Midrash, Shemot Rabbah, this is the most famous Midrash about Aholiyav and Bezalel, probably, says, Rav Abba ben Bechia says, because even the smallest Hadal of the tribes associated itself with him. Rabbi Chanim ben Pazi says, no tribe is greater than Judah, and none more lowly than Dan. There was no tribe that was greater than Judah, and none that was more lowly than Dan, which descended from one of the maidservants. And who it says, and the sons of Dan, Nechushim. God said, let him come, meaning Dan, and be associated with him, meaning Yehuda, so that no man may despise him or become arrogant, for both great and small are equal in God's sight. Bezalel comes of the tribe of Yehuda, and Aholiyav from Dan, yet the latter is associated with him. Meaning, what's the purpose of the choice of Aholiyav? Is it because of who Aholiyav is? No. It's because Aholiyav comes from Dan. And what's the message being sent when Hashem chooses Aholiyav from Shevet Dan?
It's a message of equality.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's a message that says everybody has a right to be here and that nobody should say, okay, I come from this Shevet, I come from this family, and therefore I'm greater or I'm more lowly than somebody else and I don't deserve. It's the ultimate democratic state with regards to the building of the Mishkan. Listen, in Judaism, not everything is democratic. But at least with regards to the building of the Mishkan, Hashem picked from one side all the way to the other. Everybody had a hand in it. Now, why is Dan considered the lowliest of all of the Shvatim? You might be wondering. Poor Dan. You know, there's some good Shvatim and there's some bad Shvatim, apparently. You know, why is Dan considered the lowliest?
Because of his lineage.
What's wrong with his lineage?
He was the youngest son of one of the Shvachot.
From Bilhah. Okay. But there were other sons of Shvachot. But okay, fine. Let's say it's because of his lineage. So the Midrash in Bimidbar Rabbah actually points out that when you examine the Digalim, the Machanot in the Midbar, as they traveled through the Midbar, and you place them where they were in the directions, so something interesting comes out. We won't totally understand this because this relies on, I don't know, some mystical knowledge that was probably very prevalent at the time. It says that you have, for example, Yehuda, Yisachar, Zvulun, Yitanu, Mitati, Mina Mizrach. Shem says, these three Shvatim, they're going to be traveling in the east. Okay? East is good. Mizrach is good. Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It goes on through all the Shvatim. And then it says, Dan, Asher, V'naftali, Yitanu, Min Hatzafon. They are coming from the north. Bara Kadosh Baruch Hu Arba Ruchot Olam Mizrach Marav Tzafon V'Darom Mizrach Misham Haor Yotze LaOlam. The Mizrach is the best because that's where the sun comes from. The right comes from Tzafon Misham HaChoshech Yotze LaOlam, and from the north comes darkness. Now I don't know totally what this means. I don't know if they were speaking about the way that the earth is positioned. I don't know if it's just because Israel and we're in the northern hemisphere, and so it's colder as you go further up as opposed to as you go further down. I don't know exactly what it means, but the north is a symbol of darkness. It happens to be, actually, now that I think of it, what's the opposite of the north? The south, right? The only reason I remember what south is in Hebrew is I know that more than a half of our shul comes from Drum Africa, right? That's how I remember. Otherwise, I can't translate south and north reliably. If I see Tzafon, I think, okay, that's the opposite of Darom, and Darom is Drum Africa, so Tzafon must be north. That's how my mind works. It's never worked any differently. I don't know what to tell you.
And you were born in Tzfon America.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't think of myself that way, but that's true. Now, here's the thing.
All the korbanot, not all the korbanot, most of the korbanot were done in Tzfon, and Tzfon.
That's true.
Very important in the
Rabbi, what was in the Darom, though?
It was the Mizbeach. Mizbeach was in the Darom.
The menorah.
The menorah. The menorah was in the Darom. Harotze sheyachim yadrim. If you want to become wise, you look to the south.
If you want to become rich,
you look to the north. You look at the Shulchan. The Shulchan was in the Tzafon. The menorah was in the Darom. So the idea that the light, right, that the darkness comes from the north, maybe because it's the opposite of the Darom. Although it gets kind of funny because the Mizrach is where the light actually comes from. But okay, I can't say that I really totally understand. But either way, one way or another, the darkness comes from Tzafon. And guess who's in the Tzafon? Dan. Dan is in charge of that Degel, and they're in the Tzafon. Lama shehuichshich et ha'olam b'avodah zarah, she'asa Yeravam shnei egli zahav. Why? Because he caused darkness to come into the world with Yeravam and the two Egle Zahav. You have to always keep in mind, Yeravam ben Avat, the first king of Yisrael, he made not one, but two Egle Zahav. In Yonah D'Omer for this week's parasha, he made two Egle Zahav, pretty wild, and convinced the people to worship. Now, which people did he convince to worship? And you might think Yeravam ben Avat comes from Shevet Dan. He doesn't. But the point is, what happened is actually Chazai Yeravam al kol Yisrael v'lo kiblu mimenu. He couldn't get anybody to worship it. Ela Shevet Dan. Shneamar vayoyet amach v'yashne glizav etachan natan bedan. I actually have the psukim over here from Malachim. The king took counsel and made two golden calves, and he said to the people, "You've been going up to Jerusalem long enough. This is your God of Israel who brought you up from the land of Egypt." He set up one in Beit El and one in Dan, and that proved to be because of guilt. For the people went to worship the calf at Beit El and the one at Dan. Imagine people, instead of going on a Jerusalem trip to the Kotel, instead they went to Shevet Dan to go worship at the golden calf. Pretty amazing what people will fall for. But that's not all Shevet Dan is accused of. You have in Sefer Shoftim, we just covered this. Who did we cover this with? With Micha and...
what was the name of the company?
The Levi, Menashe, right, the son of Gershom. Not Gershom, but Yonatan, that was it. Yonatan ben Gershom, Yonatan ben Menashe, that's it, from Moshe, one of the son, Moshe's grandson, basically. Moshe's grandson was the priest of Micha, basically, of the Pesel Micha, and that story is in Shoftim Yudchet, and it's right here. There was no king in Israel, and in those days the tribe of Dan was seeking a territory, etc., etc. Dan had sent out five of their numbers. They went and they found Micha, and they stole his pesel, and it started a whole mess. Here it is. The Dan had set up the sculpture image for themselves, and Yonatan ben Gershom, son of Menashe, which is really son of Moshe, according to the Midrash, served as priest to the Danite tribe until the land went into exile. And there you go. So you see, Shevet Dan, he got his hands in a lot of muck, right? A lot of avodah zarah for Shevet Dan. But it even precedes all of that. The Psik Tedor of Kahana describes how when Amalek attacked Bnei Israel, it says, who did they attack? They attacked Kol HaNechashalim Acharecha, all the ones who were kind of
lagging
behind. Exactly. Now, who's behind? Who's in the back?
Dan
is in the back. Rabbanin Amrin Zeh Shifto Shel Dan Shepolto Anan. In fact, it says that they were so unworthy that they were not protected by Adanein HaKavod. And that's why they were out there, because they were still doing Avodah Zarah. They took Pesel Micha. They could have taken it from Egypt, according to one understanding. They actually took it from Egypt. That's where they got it. So, or Micha took a Pesel, I should say. So we have over here that basically Shevet Dan is the black sheep, okay, of the family of Yaakov. And the message over here was that nevertheless, we're going to take somebody from Shevet Dan and we're going to pair him up with somebody from Shevet Yehuda. And the message being sent is, never think that you're too high or that you're too low. The message of inclusion. That's the idea over here. So in other words, this is a redemption. This is a redemption for Shevet Dan. A pre-redemption, if you will. You know, because this is basically before everything went bad.
Well, I know we touched on that before, but it's the something else we did. But exactly as you say, it's a pre-redemption. All these bad things happen after.
Yeah. In fact, I put it in a different place, but as we're going to see later, Rav Chaim Vital uses the phrase, Hikdim Hashem Yitbarach Refu'a L'Makah, that he put the healing before the injury. But I put it over here because it gets Kabbalistic and I wanted to wait on that. So the last approach that I wanted to look at is a dynamic duo, okay? Which looks at Aholiyav not as a tragic figure, you know, from Shevet Dan, not as some kind of inclusion. But there's actually something, I don't even want to say almost, but actually messianic. I left the messianic overtones out, actually. We covered it last time. But there's something over here which is theologically, spiritually fundamental to the makeup of the Jewish people and how Hashem wants the Mikdash to exist. And we'll start with Ibn Ezra, who actually rejects this view, but he quotes it. Ibn Ezra quotes HaGaon. Now, the Gaon here is not the Vilna Gaon. It's probably Rav Sadia Gaon. It's sometimes hard to tell. But over here, he says, Laman ifchru Bezalel v'Aliyav. Okay, so he quotes this Gaon, who wonders why Bezalel and Aliyav are chosen. V'hishiv ki Bezalel mibnei Yehuda, shehim shilo Yaakov l'gur Aryeh, gam Aliyav mibnei Dan, shehim shilo Moshe l'gur Aryeh. There is something that keeps Dan and Yehuda together. What is it? In Parashat Vayechi, we find out, most famously, Gur Aryeh Yehuda, Mitarev Bni Alita, Hararavats Karyeh Uklavi Mi Yikumen. Yehuda is associated with a lion cub. The Maharal Miprag wrote a sefer on the Rashi called Gur Aryeh, because his name is Rabbi Yehuda Milowi, and he was a descendant of David HaMelech. He comes from Shevet Dan. But a little bit less famously, Moshe Rabbeinu himself, in Parashat Zot HaBracha, says, Uledan Amar Dan Gur Aryeh, Yizanek Min HaBashan, that he's also Gur Aryeh. Amazing. Two different Shvatim are associated with the same animal, with a lion cub. And the Ibn Ezra quotes the Gaon, who says, Ha'aryeh tsar mi'acharav v'kacha haya habayit. I don't totally know what this means, but he's quoting a Mishnah in Midot that says that just like a lion is wide in the front and narrow in the back, so too the Beit HaMikdash is wide in the front and narrow in the back. I didn't really look into this too deep, but that's what the Mishnah in Midot says.
You know, to now, say that they were chosen because one is from Shevet Yehuda and one is from Shevet Dan, yeah, doesn't really tell us why they specifically were chosen. No. Shevet Yehuda has a lot of people, as the Shevet Dan. Why specifically this one from Yehuda and this one from Dan?
I think it's just to narrow it down. And I think the idea is that Bezalel was, you know, the one who was really endowed with this divine skill. And perhaps Aholiyav, you could still say Aholiyav was a good sculptor, but that's not the reason he was chosen. That's not the ultimate reason he was chosen. There could have been other sculptors in Shevet Asher, or Binyamin, or et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But Hashem thought it was really important to pick somebody specifically from Yehuda and specifically from Dan. And they're joined
God is also likened to a lion by Moshe.
Why? What does it say about God?
God amar baruch machiv God kelavi shachin.
Kelavi. That's true. Okay. Kelavi.
I think, if I remember correctly, the Mishnah in Midot is talking purely about the physical appearance of the Beit HaMikdash.
Yeah, it is.
Wide oil and the narrow bit at the back, although
right.
It says that it's the wrong way around, because really the Kodesh Kodesh is in the front. But...
No, but that is what the Mishnah in Midot says. And the Mishnah says, like an Ari, which is why it's called Ariel. Right? We know that the Beit HaMikdash is actually called Ariel, Nachalat Ariel. So now the Ibn Ezra here gets a little thorny, and he says, this is all a nice drash, but the truth is that Bezalel and Aliyav didn't build the Beit HaMikdash, and the Mishkan is never called Ariel or Ariel, and it's not wide in the front and narrow in the back. So how can that be associated with Bezalel and Aliyav? So he says, it's a nice drasha, you can say it in shul, but it has no connection to reality. Fine. So he says, Baruch HaFa Mishkan Sha'asso, She'asu Hayashave. There was no, it was a rectangular box, the Mishkan. Vein Tam L'Sheila Tokin Yivchub Avor Shalaya B'Yisrael Kamoim. He says, yeah, the reason why they were chosen, because they were the best. So I was wrong before. Ibn Ezra also thinks that they were the best. That's why they were chosen. Fine. But the Ibn Ezra, a little bit, goes overboard over here, according to most of the Mefarshim, by saying that Bezalel and Eliav have nothing to do with the Beit HaMikdash. Because it's not totally true. Why is it not totally true?
It's the same Kalim.
Okay, it's the same Kalim, that's true. Although when Shlomo remade some of them, most of them. Mm-hmm. Right?
The box to the Mishkan, the box to the Seder they broke, that remained the same.
Yeah,
wrong.
Okay. But I'd say even further. If the salient point over here, according to the Gaon over here, is that it comes from Shevet Yehuda and Shevet Dan. That's the important part over here, that Bezalel and Eliav are from Shevet Yehuda and Shevet Dan, and they're supposed to be somehow doing it together. Then it would be interesting if the Beit HaMikdash somehow had that same combination, right? That same duo. And isn't it convenient that that's actually the case? The Rush points out, he says, Naftule Alim Niftalti. This is actually on the pasuk of the description of the naming of Naftali. He says, Naftule Alim Niftalti Machoti Gam Yacholti. I put the whole thing over here because he has a good question, and I like this Rush. He says, Kasha Lashon Yacholti. What is who names Naftali? Rachel, right? Because Naftali is the first son of Bilha, which is Rachel's Shifcha, right? So why is she call him Naftali? Naftali alim niftalti machoti gam yacholti. Because she says, because I succeeded finally against my sister. I won this round. The Rush says, really? Kashel lashon yacholti, the mashma shahel rachel yacholet yoter milaya bebanim. Baladayin lo yisiga lechashbon bnei ashaleya. She had one child. Leah already had four. Leah had already popped out four children, and Rachel had one child with a shifcha. And she says, like this triumphalism. So the Rush says, what was going on? Interesting. The Rush says that Rachel in Ruach HaKodesh saw that the most important child to come from Leah is going to be Bezalel. That Leah was so proud that she had Yehuda because he was going to have Bezalel one day. He was going to build the Mishkan. But Rachel says, yeah, well, I also got something. Because I'm also going to have Achisamach, who's going to have Aholiyav. Now, what's the problem?
She still didn't win. If she says, I conquered my sister, I got the best of her. That's not the point here.
Well, he's just trying to tie, but that's not the problem here. There's a problem. If I don't keep reading, there's a big problem.
Well, Dan wasn't
Naftali and Dan.
This is Naftali. This is not Dan. This is Naftali. What does Naftali have to do with Aliyah ben Achisamach? She has to wait until she has Dan. What's going on over here? So the Rush finishes. He says, Va'od, v'binyan Beit HaMikdash HaRishon, yotzei mimeni chacham cheres, k'dechtiv, v'hu ben isha almana mishevet Naftali, v'fi chachamar al Naftali, gam yacholti alecha, v'chein lashon ha-pasuk pen yomar, oiva yacholti, perusho, yesh li yacholot alecha. Apparently, someone's going to come from Naftali. The question is, who's going to come from Naftali? Okay? Now, I'll get to it in a second, but I want to point out that the Datsa came in Bali Tosfot, so this was apparently a French tradition, right? Both the Rush and the Bali Tosfot, they said similar things. They said Naftali was named, that his name comes from, there are many different ways of understanding it. It says, Ki Naftulei Niftalti. The problem is that it's a very hard word to translate. Niftalti, Naftali, what exactly, Niftaltol, what does it mean? So according to the Bali Tosfot, it's a reference to Tzamid Petil, which is a deep, tight connection. Klomar chiburim. Why? Nitchabarti machoti mimnei achoti atid latzeit betzalel. She's going to have betzalel. And I, nitchabarti machoti bo'otam lachad ektiv v'ito aliyah ben achisamach l'batadan. Gam yachot kemoken bebait vishun shabana shlomo shesiyem chirum. Shehaya mishev naftali. Okay, so he tipped our hand. So basically, the Bali Tosfot also say that Naphtali is going to have somebody who's going to be important in the building of the Beit Mikdash. So what's going on? So the Medrash Tanhuma says as follows: the tabernacle and the sanctuary. So this is the Mishkan, right? This is the word that we use all the time in our daily lives, tabernacle. And the sanctuary, another word that we like to use all the time, were erected by these two tribes. For Shlomo was of the tribe of Judah, and Chiram was the tribe of Dan. Now, who's this Chiram? So, and here it gets a little bit tricky. Here it says Chiram was from Dan. Problem is, it says, you know what? Let's look it up over here. Vayomer Chiram melech Tzor v'ichtav v'yishlachar Shlomo b'avat Hashem et Amo, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That's actually not the Chiram that we're interested in. Ben Isha min Bnot Dan. Vaviv Ish Sori. Yodea Lasot Bezahav Vakesev Benachoshet Bavarzel, etc., etc., etc. He was involved in the building of and the donation of the materials for the Beit Hamikdash. The Midrash says Chiram was from tribe of Dan, as it says, the son of a widow of the tribe of Naphtali, but in Divrei Hayamim that we just read, it says the son of the woman of the daughters of Dan. In other words, he comes from both Shevet Naphtali and Shevet Dan. This Chiram, who would eventually help build the Beit HaMikdash, which means that Rachel, when she had Naphtali and Dan, she basically was having the people who were going to build, respectively, the Mishkan and the Beit HaMikdash. That's what she was excited about. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And she was connecting that to Yehuda that Leah had. Interestingly, Rav Yochanan says a nice thing. He says, from where do we know that a man should not chase his occupation from the occupation of his ancestors? That you should do what your parents did, or at least your grandparents, or whatever. And King Solomon sent and fetched Chiram out of Tyre, and he was the son of a widow of the tribe of Naphtali, and his father was a man of Tyre, a worker in brass. And the master taught on this verse, although his father was from the tribe of Naphtali, his mother was of the tribe of Dan, of whom is it written, and behold, with him I have placed Eliab, the son of Ahisamach, of the tribe of Dan. In other words, it was important that Ahaliyav had a descendant that eventually, finally, took over the family business of building sanctuaries, holy temples. Okay? Now, what does it mean, though? What does all this mean? Yeah.
What Rachel is going around the houses, so to speak, on this. I mean, she was going to have Binyamin. The temple was half in Yehuda and half in Binyamin. Why does she have to make it so convoluted through Dan and Naphtali?
Well, these were the first two, right? If you think of it that way.
But okay, I didn't think of it that way, but Dan wasn't around yet. So in some case, it is Nevuah that she's going to have Dan and what's going to happen. So why not just take the Nevuah directly via Binyamin?
Right. No, I hear you. I mean, and the same token also, Dan also makes some mistakes. So it's not as if he's always on the right side of history. But I was wondering, so what does this mean, though? What does it mean that Dan and Yehuda are working together? What's the significance of that? So the Zohar actually weighs in on this. And the Zohar says, "Pekudei HaMishkan, b'ha'u chila nafku, minalan, dikhtiv v'atzal b'nor b'nchor l'matei Yehuda, da'ihu misitra d'yamina." So he was from the right side. That's what this means. Sitra is the side. Yamina is right. Vito Aliyav da'iu misitra de smala. So Aliyav was from the left side. Mishkan misitra de yamina usmala it kam vitavid Moshe tahava binayu okimbe. So the Zohar is saying that the Mishkan was built from both the right side and from the left side. Moshe being in the middle, he was the one who organized the whole thing. For a little bit more context, Rabbeinu Bachaye says, "Shem Elohim b'chol ma'aseh bereishit v'achar kach Hashem hamiyuchad." Says when you look at Sefer Bereishit in the beginning of the creation of the world, so you have two names that are mentioned. You have Shem Elohim and you have Shem Yud Kei Vav Kei, right? And they're kind of an interplay. There's kind of dance between them. And he says you have the same thing with the Beit Hamikdash, with the Mishkan later on. You have a Kvod Hashem Malei at Mishkan. Shu Keneged Shem Elohim Yizker Hashem Miyuchad VeAmar Ki Anan Hashem Al Mishkan. And what he says, what the point is Keshem Shehaolam Nivra B'Shtei Midot. Just like the world was created with two different qualities. What are those two qualities? Midat Rachamim and Midat Hadin. The quality of compassion and the quality of strict justice. Kenegda mishkan asa b'shnei umanim b'tzalel mishevet Yehuda keneged Hashem hamiyuchad v'aliyav mishevet Dan keneged midat hadin. Okay, now this works out very nicely because when you look at the names of Yehuda and Dan, what do you get? Yehuda, the most obvious thing that jumps out of you is Yehuda is Yudkin, okay, with the Dalet in there. And Dan is just the word Din, right? Dan Yadin Amok, Yachad Shiftei Israel. That's what Dan is. So you have Yehuda being Yudkei Vavkei is Hashem Hashem, which is Rachamim, which is what the Zohar means when it says Sitra Diyamina. That's Rachamim, the right hand. And then you have the left hand, which is the Midat Ad-Din, which is Shevet Dan. So the idea being that the Mishkan was created from both Rachamim and Din. And here's the Rav Chaim Vital that I was referring to before. He says, Atidim Yisrael atidim liot ovdim egel acher sha'asau Yeravam ben Dan. We know that Yeravam is going to make two egels, and he puts one in Shevet Dan. So hikdim Hashem mitbarach ufual makah. So he had Aholiav get involved in the Mishkan. Lechaper al to avon sha'atid liot bedan. See, it's an amazing thing. He's being mechaper before they actually do the sip. It's a nice trick. Veda ki Betzalel hayam yisod shem havaya. Betzalel from Shevet Yehuda was from Yudkei Vavkei. V'lachin degel machan Yehuda kadma mizracha v'chinat ha-tat. I actually don't know what that means. Rabbi, what does this mean?
It's the male aspect of the horses.
Of horses.
That's what it is. You haven't explained what it means. I've got no idea, but that's what it is. Tatay is like the tata male aspect.
Okay, fine, if you say so. V'lachena asa b'tzalel, tzarech lom, sorry, tzel kel apnimi, dahainu yirot ha-mishkan vo'al apnimiim. Okay, here's an interesting point that we're going to get into a little bit later as well, that b'tzalel, what does he make? He makes the yirot ha-mishkan, the inner ones, the ones that are, it's actually a fascinating thing. The mishkan is covered by many layers of fabric, okay? And some of these layers are internal. They never see the light of day, right? They're not covering it for any purpose. And then they're the ones on the top. Okay. So Bezalel, he's the one who actually ends up making the riot apnimiim. V'riot o achitzoniot asa aliyav. The aliyav makes the ones that are on top. Sheva mishevet dan shum asef lekol machanot. Besod shem adoshem. Right. This is supposed to be like Elokim. V'lachein asa riot izim klipa lepri. The riyot that are on top, those are from izim. Izim is a very, a very crude type of leather, of skin. And so it didn't have to be very nice. It wasn't very nice. It wasn't very delicate. And also, he says, also, Bebinyan Shlomo, which came from Yehuda and Chiram, nitchabu shneim besod, I really don't know what to do with this. I don't know whether I'm supposed to say it out loud, whether I'm even supposed to read it. I don't even know what I'm supposed to do with it. I know that it looks a lot like Adoniyahu, which is interesting. But okay.
Yes.
And now, I told you we weren't going to get into this, but this is something that comes up a lot. La'atid Mashiach miYehuda v'sareah mishevet Dan. Can you describe a parashat Balach? Kizeh tachlit binyan beit hamikdash. We know that Mashiach is going to come from Shevet Yehuda, from David HaMelech. But there's also an association with Shevet Dan, which we covered last time when we did Chushim Dan. I don't want to go over it again, but it is there. The idea that Mashiach is connected to also from Shevet Dan. Now the Kli Yakar jumps in over here, and a little bit relates to the name, okay? He says, why is his name Aholiyav? Nikra Kain al Shem ki hu yivne ohel moed mavinu shav shamayim. Hashem Zeni Kar B'Shem Aholiyav. He's making an ohel for the Av. That's what he's doing. He's making an ohel for the Av. He was born to it. Ben Achisamach. He was born to the son. He is the son of Achisamach. Kisham Makom Smichut Ha'achim. What's the role of the Beit HaMikdash? One of its roles is to create brotherly love, to be a place of kapara. The Hainu Ashchira Shchina Misrael, and also to create shalom between us and Hashem. As it says in Shir Shirim. Okay, this is where he mentions that he has to be connected to Gur Aryeh, so it connects him to Yehuda. Ramaz Yehuda, v'dan l'shnei shemotav yizbarach Hashem lakin shem shal rachamim shal din asher shitev HaKadosh Baruch Hu beberachu bara Abraham haolam. Okay, here the Kliyakar is pointing out that Dan and Yehuda are connected to Shem Shemot Hashem because they're rachamim and din. Okay, good. That's the Kliyakar. Rav Tzadok, I don't want to read the whole thing inside over here, but basically he says that the importance of Dan over here was that the fact that Dan had such a sordid history was actually quite important. And actually it's even more important in the messianic mode, but it's important over here as well. He says, we tend to look at Dan as being the misfit because he's so involved in Avodah Zarah. But he says, that's only the Marit Ayin. That's what it looks like. But he says, we always have, when you look deeper, there's always a Zelu Matzeh. Zelu Matzeh B'Kedusha means that if something has strong powers in one direction, it's going to have strong powers in the opposite direction. So the fact that Dan can fall so low means that when he goes in the other direction, he can get so high. And that's a good interplay with Yehuda. Okay, in other words, and he points out, by the way, this was Koch Shimshon, right? Shimshon is really like this, he's the anti-hero in Tanakh, right? He's the one who's the hero that you rely on, but you know, as they said in that Batman movie, he's the hero we deserve. He's the hero. What is the line, Robbie? He's the hero not the hero we need, but he's the hero we deserve, or something like that, right? He's involved in all kinds of sorted things, but on the other hand, he's the hero. He's the one who saves everybody. I found this in a website that pointed out an interesting insight in terms of the Yeriot. The Ohel is covered with goat's wool. It's not visible from within the Mishkan, but from above it is. And it's made from 11 strips, and there's an overhang from the 11th strip, which was made by Eliav. What's the significance of this? Take away his typo. So he says, one of the ways that Yaakov and Esav are described are as sheep and goats. Yaakov is always described as being like a sheep, and Esav is Ish Seir. Right? He's a man who is a goat. He's connected to Izim. The part of the Mishkan which is to counteract Esav, is the tent woven from goat wool. That's the Yeriot on top. That's the outer part which serves to protect. The inner part is the beauty of the closeness to Hashem. So Klal Yisrael needs both of these, the outer protection and the inner beauty. In other words, Dan is there to protect and Bezalel is there to create the beauty. Interesting idea.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I think I'm going to end there because this Sifte Kohen is just wild. He talks about how I'll read the beginning of it. This is not the Shach from Shulchan Aruch. There's a Sifte Kohen that you'll hear quoted all the time, which is the Shach on Shulchan Aruch. He was one of the core halachists from the 18th century, and he would never write anything like this because this is one of the Talmidim of the Arizal, the Sifte Kohen, a lesser known sefer, but quoted very often in Kabbalistic sources. And what he basically says over here is that from Moshe down to Eliav, we have the construction of the Mishkan, actually all the way down to regular people, even past Eliav, you have the construction of the Mishkan across the four spiritual worlds. In Kabbalah, you have four different worlds. You have Atzilut, Bria, Yetzirah, and Asiyah. We live in the world of Asiyah. The highest one is Atzilut, then Bria, then Yetzirah, and Asiyah. Abia, that's what it's called. And he says that the four types of artists who worked on the Mishkan, they were from each world. The regular people working, ha'osim b'malacha asu b'b'chinat asiya. So that's us. All the regular people working on the Mishkan, they were working on it on the level of asiya. Aliyav was working on the level of Yetzirah, this is going upwards. Bezalel was working on it as Bria, and Moshe was already at Atzilut, kafiyah kavana. Okay, Moshe, he didn't do any work. He was just getting orders from Hashem. But Bezalel was kind of translating that into, actual, instructions. I don't know if this is how it actually works, but Aliyah was already doing Yetzirah, and the people were doing Yasiyah. And it goes on like this for a little while, deeper and deeper. And then he pulls this one out. If anybody wants to take this one on as homework, I'll be very happy to hear about it. I'll just read it. Aholiyav ben Achisamach, gematria rama im chamesh milot. Seref imo hasamech, shuaya lamateh dan, shu emza hakinui, olebe gematria yetzir. I know what all those words are, but I don't know how to say them properly. Or what they mean here. I tried to do a little bit of the math. I couldn't get anything to work. I'm sure that it works, but I just don't know what it is or what it means. So I'll leave that to you as homework. Just to review what we did. So we started wondering who this Aliyav character is. And we saw that some of Farshim relate them as an individual, either as somebody who was just a very good listener, somebody who was able to receive the divine flow from Bezalel, or somebody who actually had a tremendous amount of skill and was chosen because he was a master craftsman, according to the Barbara. We saw that the key might be simply that he comes from Shevet Dan, which was the lowliest of tribes. And the message over here is one of inclusion and one of equalization and saying nobody should feel special just or unspecial just because of what Shevet they come from. And finally, we saw that, no, there may be something even deeper, that the connection between Dan and Yehuda is a connection of Midat HaRachamim, Midat HaDin, and it's one that is essential to the building of not only the Mishkan, but also the building of the Beit HaMikdash, and as I mentioned, also to the coming of the Mashiach, and that there's this partnership between Shevet Dan and Shevet Yehuda, which is always there. Just to bring to mind, we saw that Hushim ben Dan was connected to Yehuda himself, and we saw that this kind of partnership actually takes place across history, across the Masara. And there are deep Kabbalistic undertones over here, which we did not really scratch the surface of. But feel free to call me or text me with your insights. Shabbat shalom.
Shabbat shalom.
Shabbat shalom.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. Cool.